the role of life is really to help people identify how to live an aligned life. When they are living in alignment with their values and their beliefs, when they are doing work that is meaningful and aligns with those values and beliefs, when they're spending their time in a way that is meaningful to them too, ultimately that leads to living a life well lived, is what it sounds like. Would you describe the rule of life kind of as a pathway to that?
100%.
Welcome, friends, to our latest episode of the Overflowing Life podcast, where we navigate the crossroads of modern leadership, authentic living, and the redemptive power of business. I'm your host, Chris Lagarde. Today, we culminate this season's journey by integrating our insights into a powerful and transformative tool called the Rule of Life. We'll share what a rule of life is, explore its historical roots, and guide you in crafting your very own. If the themes explored this season have resonated with you, this episode is not to be missed. It's the culmination of our series, offering practical wisdom that has the potential to bring significant change to your life. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode, and actually the final episode in our season. That's just Adrian and I as the host and co-host. I am excited to kind of put all of these pieces that we've been working on together over the last 10 or so episodes. And yeah, I'm excited. I don't know how you feel, Adrian, but I'm excited to get this done and to lay this out for everybody.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, it's been a fun season and to really explore some topics that we're both pretty passionate about.
Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, I thought we could start off by kind of doing a high flyover of what we've discussed this season. And, you know, because it has been a little bit of time since we started recording into now, and maybe some of the things that we've learned as we've gone through, you know, recording this season. And so we started off, the whole reason we started all this whole season off was that, hey, we're observing a problem. And that's that our souls, our very souls, quote unquote, hang in the balance. And what is causing our souls to hang in the balance is the way that our current world works of busy, hurry, worry, distraction. And it's concerning. In fact, so as we record this, it's right before Thanksgiving and we have an early Thanksgiving coming up. We always order turkeys from these, this local farm, and they, poor turkey. It woke up today happy and fat and ended up in my car on the way home today, this afternoon.
It's a bad day for the turkey.
It is, but it'll be a good day on Saturday when we
eat it.
That's
right.
I was talking with a guy there about how, like, he works outside of New York City and, like, younger guy. And we were talking about this resonates with him, the idea of distracted and how he gave me this story about he works in restaurants. He's actually like a professional chef, and he was working somewhere the other day or a while back or whatever. This woman ordered avocado toast, but hold the avocado. And then she was upset that it cost her like $18. And he's like, you could have just ordered like
toast
on the side. That would have been $3. And it's like, you know, what caused her to do that? I don't know. I wasn't there, but it's like, was she not present enough to think through what was happening? And I don't know, but it really resonated with him when I was sharing about, you know, these concepts of how we're so distracted and our conscious is being managed by screens in a lot of ways or by our busyness or our excuses or whatever it is. And I've had a lot of conversations and it resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about our conversations the past couple episodes too about the problem and the hurry and the busyness. And I read something a while ago that really stuck in my head. And it basically said that trying to eliminate hurry as much as possible is one of the best ways to reduce anxiety. And so that really has been a theme for me, a constant. And even over the course of our conversations, it has become so much more powerful for me. And so even practical things in my daily life, like I try to leave a little bit of breathing room in my day between going to meetings. I try to leave the house maybe 5 or 10 minutes early, so I'm just not feeling that rush of, oh, I got to get there, that anxiety to get there. And so I think that's something that I'll continue to do and experiment with and just kind of put a microscope over what are some other little ways in my life that I can eliminate hurry so that way I'm more present for when I show up.
You know, and make no mistake about it, what we're talking about is, it is, as I said, in an earlier episode, it is punk rock. It is rebellious. It is going to take real intention to push back against this wave of, influence, right? And I know we discussed James Clear and Atomic Habits, but you know, your environment is that biggest influence on you. And we swim in this, you know, do fish know that they're in water? Probably not. And that's where we're at. Like, we're in this, and it's an experiment that started, I don't know, 15 years ago when smartphones really came out. And those things are, you know, it's not just the smartphones, right? There's a lot to it, but it feels like it's almost inevitable that we head towards a future where, do you ever watch Star Trek Next Generation?
I have never. Sorry.
Okay. I watched some of it, and there's this alien race called the Borg, and it's kind of like the Matrix, where all these people are like half machine, half human, plugged into the same thing, and kind of like we're headed towards that plus a mix of Ready Player One, and there's nothing that can stop it. And you know, the folks that are making the software and the devices are all not designing it so that we, you know, they're not designing it for, we're the product. They're trying to like get as much out of us as we can. And to resist that's going to take some serious effort and support. We've got to create, you know, I think creating community around this of other people that are like-minded, that understand, I don't want to have an IV into my phone. You know, I don't want to be held captive by my need to work all the time. I want to create a spacious, unhurried life that is fulfilling. And that does take, we're going to meet a lot of resistance to that.
Yeah. And have there been any practical things that you've tried that has kind of helped you untether yourself from that digital world that we live in?
Yeah. And you know, one is being intentional with the phone. And most phones, you can track how much time you are, spending on it. You can put limits on that. So I have limits on the social media, the few social media things I have. I've gotten rid of most of them. But I still have Instagram. I get a lot of laughs out of that. But when the alarm goes off, I didn't used to do this, but when it says time's up, I don't hit the ignore for 15 more minutes. I do sometimes.
You snooze it.
Yeah.
That's okay. We're not going for perfection here.
No, we're not. YouTube's the same thing. But, you know, I also just started looking at how many times a day on average I'm picking up my phone. And I just put in, which we're going to talk about in my rule of life today, that I'd like to keep it under 100 pickups a day, which sounds like a lot. But man, you look at how much we pick those things up, and it's a lot. I think the average is like 300, something
wow.
like that. And I'm trying to keep my phone usage to like less than 3.5 hours a day, which includes, you know, like texting and other things. If I'm listening to a podcast, it includes that. So, you know, it's not like I'm staring at it for 3.5 hours straight. So, putting some boundaries. That's one thing. And putting it to bed. My phone has a bedtime, which is 8 o'clock. And that's when we gather as a family, and we might watch a TV show or play a game or something like that. But 8 o'clock is when it goes to bed. That's one thing. Not to mention, again, talking about a rule of life, morning times, right? There's a specific routine and way of living my morning that allows me to have peace and unhurry and focus going into my workday. So how about you? Have you picked up anything?
Well, I have always protected mornings for myself just because I know that that is what I need to start my day off, right? I need to be up and ready to go before my kids get up. I need to have a few minutes of quiet time to either just check my planner or kind of mentally unload stuff that's going on, or just spend a few minutes reading. And so to me, that really sets the tone for the day. One of the other sort of digital detox things that I did at the start of our recordings too, just to try it, was all of the spam emails, all of the mailing lists that I'm a part of. You know, we all get sucked into that. Every time we order something, you got to click here to subscribe. I have unsubscribed from all of them. So every time I get a marketing email, I just go find unsubscribe. And that has just reduced the clutter in my email, which means that I'm not compulsively checking my email just to see what came through. And so that's been kind of a nice experiment for me to just kind of get rid of some of the digital clutter in my life. And so that, along with the phone, I've been trying to leave my phone in the other room more frequently, just so that way I'm not so compulsively picking it up. And then also, I think we talked early on about how frequently people are checking their phones when they're sitting at stoplights or when they're sitting in a waiting room or, you know, waiting in line at the supermarket. I've been very conscientious about not picking up my phone during those times. Doesn't always work. I am tempted, right? Especially if I get a message in or something. So just being more aware of, you know what, I don't need to check my phone right now. Just stay focused, stay present with what's going on right now.
What's the impact on you? What have you noticed?
Most of the time, it is a little bit freeing. Sometimes it causes a little bit of angst because I want that little hit of dopamine of what message came in, what email did I get. But also, I think it's allowing me to have a little bit more of that white space. I'm not instantly going to the distraction of my phone. I'm just kind of letting my thoughts settle and just being in the moment. And it's like building a muscle, I think, right? It takes a little bit of time to really strengthen that and to have the to choose the willpower to not pick up the phone is almost something that takes practice, like strengthening or, you know, working out.
It is an addiction. I mean, just like, you know, drugs or something like that. I mean, it is an addiction. And, you know, when I started noticing, you know, I'd be watching, you know, our family show at the end of the night, my phone would be right next to me. And I just like, I had to pick it up. I'm like, yeah. What is wrong with me? And no, it's an addiction. And there you go through withdrawal. Make no mistake. And so it does create anxiety in the beginning. And yet if you push through that, you know, withdrawal period, you know, you start to get more and more comfortable with leaving it. One quick tip, maybe for you, Adrian. I've been using this product called SaneBox. It does cost some money, but you actually are able to train it to put like spam or what, you know, you can create different folders. And what it does is it automatically moves stuff out of your inbox into other folders for you. I know you can set up filter rules and stuff like, I've never been good at that. And so this is like, it's freed my inbox a ton. So it does a good job recognizing promotional spam stuff, even more better than Gmail does, because I know Gmail has those things in it. But I found it to really declutter my inbox quite a bit if somebody wanted to try that.
Great idea.
So, you know, we laid out this problem that we were just kind of reminiscing over, and okay, well, what do you do about it, right? How do you be punk rock and push back? What does that look like? And it starts with the, you know, we said, hey, it starts with surrender, that concept of letting go. It's not giving up, it's letting go and saying, hey, you know, this is not all about me. I can't do it all. I've got limits. And so I have to let go of some of the results of some of this. There's a lot of different facets to surrender. Like we talked with Anne, the spiritual director, about that. And like you and I discussed on our episode, but you know, that's a very important first step. It's like, you know, if you don't acknowledge the problem and say, I can't do this, you're not going to be able to move past it. You've got to hit that quote unquote rock bottom before you get to a point that you can move on and make progress from that. So from there, we talked about ancient practices, and we outlined those as being solitude and silence. That was kind of one practice. Contemplation and reflection was the second. Rest was the third, and authentic community was another. Right? Cultivating those. And let me say this, because we didn't address this in the first one, and it's something that's kind of come up recently, is solitude and silence is not necessarily, I know we discussed this, but it's not sitting in front of a wall, staring at a wall or whatever. It's, there are a lot of different ways to do it. And especially if somebody is diagnosed with ADHD, it can be very difficult to sit and have a quote unquote quiet mind. And I've spoken with a coach recently that specializes in that, you know, okay, what does that look like? And the goal of solitude and silence is to observe yourself, is to observe your thoughts, to get your mind to a quiet place. And he was sharing with me that, you know, somebody who's diagnosed officially with ADHD, they have 10 times the thoughts that the average person does. And so, you know, it may look different for them to reach that or go for the silence and solitude and quiet their mind and get to that, you know, contemplative place, but that's the goal. However you get there, even if it's painting or mowing the lawn or gardening or working out, whatever that is for you, however you do that, you know, do that. But there is something special about the solitude and silence part of it. You know, so, you know, there's no one way to get there, right? We all, there's a thousand ways to get there. Just the point is to get to that point where you can reflect, right? We talked about John Ortberg and how he was talking about the consciousness being managed by phones, by screens, and we're not managing our consciousness. That's the art of living is the art of managing your consciousness. And if you're not giving space to do that, that's where the problem that we discussed, the soul hanging in the balance, really comes into play.
Yeah. And I think along with the solitude and silence, how there's so many different practices, going for a walk or journaling, or as you said, some kind of art form or some kind of exercise. I think there's also an element of peace that comes with your practice of silence and solitude. So whether it's sitting, maybe it is staring at a blank wall and sitting and meditating, or you're outdoors out in nature, you'll know that you are in that space when you feel peace and when you feel your brain just kind of quieting. I always think about my brain as popcorn, or I think I described it as dumping a junk drawer out on a trampoline. When yes. I'm in my place of solitude and silence, and it's usually on walks, I can just sort of feel all of those thoughts kind of settle. And then when I'm done, out of my practice, out of my walk, I just always feel a little bit of relief, a little bit lighter, and a little bit more clarity.
Again, I'll go to the image or the analogy of you get a bunch of dirt and silt and pond water from a pond in a jar, clear jar. You shake it up, it's going to be murky. Let it sit there. 24, 48 hours later, it's actually going to be really clear. And that's like, it takes time for the mind to kind of become clear.
That's right.
We also discussed identity, right? Understanding who you are, right? Who is the person that you've been made to be? What's the unique identity that you have, the gift that you bring to the world around you? And then we also discuss self-awareness, which is different than identity, right? Identity is if you don't know what it is, yours job is to discover it. And it does shift a little bit as we grow. Maybe we add a little bit or take away a little bit, but there is something that, you know, you are who you are, what you bring to the world naturally. And self-awareness is that self-knowing, that self-observing and learning more and more about your patterns and the way that you know, the story behind the story that you make up about whatever that meant. Then, okay, well, it's not just the story. I'm retelling the story. It's what did that story mean, and understanding the ins and outs of that. When you put all that together kind of in a blender, what do you do with it? Right? That's okay. So what? And so what I would love to share with folks is this tool that is called a rule of life. I alluded to it earlier. And what is a rule of life? First of all, it's a set of practices, values, and habits that guide your daily living, kind of like a roadmap to to align your life to your North Star. And when you think of the idea of a rule, it's not a rule as like, I've got to follow this rule or law. It's like a ruler. It's like a straight line that helps you draw a straight line. It's like a plumb line kind of an idea. And I've heard it referred to or explained as a trellis in a garden. Right, that the trellis is placed there so the vines and the flowers can hang on and grow up and lean on that for support. And so that's what a rule of life is. This is not about, you know, making something legalistic or like, oh, if you know you don't follow this, you're awful. No, it's guardrails to say, hey, here's where I want to go, and here are the things that I know that are going to help and point me to that end goal. Right. When you look at like, what is that end goal? What's the one thing that how I want to show up in my life? And one thing that helps me to understand that is to do Stephen Covey's famous funeral exercise, right? Think about your funeral at the end of your life. What do you want people to say about you? Who do you want to be? And if you could distill that down to a concept, as simple as you can make it, that's going to be the center of your rule of life. And all of the other practices are going to kind of be like they're going to draw you into the center of that rule of life.
It sounds like the rule of life is really to help people identify how to live an aligned life. When they are living in alignment with their values and their beliefs, when they are doing work that is meaningful and aligns with those values and beliefs, when they're spending their time in a way that is meaningful to them too, ultimately that leads to living a life well lived, is what it sounds like. Would you describe the rule of life kind of as a pathway to that?
100%. It's like it takes all of these concepts of habits, values, principles, and puts it all together in this fairly simple format to say, okay, how do I live that? Right. And so that's exactly how I would describe it.
It's your playbook for how to live a happy and meaningful life.
Yes, it's like a playbook, right? And it's interesting because it came from 4th century monastic Christians, the Desert Fathers, as they call them. They fled Rome after Rome adopted Christianity as its official religion, and it became kind of commonplace. And they were fleeing from what they felt was not a full version. It was a government co-opted version of their spirituality. And so they fled, and it was, you know, the guy St. Basil the Great that kind of came up with this rule of life that the monks and the nuns and the people that were living in this community were to follow to help guide their life. And really the center of it for them was about becoming more like God, more like Jesus. And so it's simple. And so here's what's simple about it. And this is kind of, I think, why I like it, because it is so simple. It's just four or so buckets. Maybe you can have three, maybe five. I think, you know, it's been around for 1600 years. I'm not going to mess with a good formula. But it's four buckets that you can put the habits, the rhythms, the practices of your life into to kind of help you live those out. And, you know, it ties your rhythms to your being, right? We had talked about early on the concept that probably why we push back on these more ancient practices of solitude and rest and things like that is because it's about being, not doing. And we want to do. This allows you to be. These are the things that are going to allow you to be and show up in the way that you want to. Not that there's no doing things on there necessarily. I'll share a few things that are on mine, but it just keeps you centered in all of that.
So, Chris, how would one go about developing a rule of life?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not so first, I'll caution. I appreciate the question. I caution everybody. This is not a fast practice. Like we like to be in our country, like go, go, go. I want immediate results. Just like we had talked about with self-awareness and the Enneagram, it's not quick. Though the beginning, it can start quickly, but it's something you want to sit with, right? It's almost like this is sacred work that you're bringing to the center, because it's not just a to-do list. This is how you want to be. It's a how you want to be list. So the way that I would suggest starting out would be to say, okay, what is my North Star, right? What's the one thing that's going to help? What's the singular purpose that I want my life to be aimed at, right? And that could be something as simple as love. I want to show up at the highest level of love. I know for me, that's essentially what I have in the middle is like, I want to give and receive love to God. And I want to follow the life of Jesus of Nazareth. I want to show up like he did, because when I read about him, I'm like, man, you know, he elevated the oppressed. He elevated the people who didn't have, the prostitutes of the time, and this tax collectors and the people who were outcasts. And he had such great, you know, he had great responses to the people who were in power at the time and the religious, you know, the religious leaders at the time. He had great responses to them, and he had great questions for people that really caused them to think differently. He shared stories, and I'm really obsessed with that. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, what is your North guiding star? You know, what is the thing that's going to keep you headed towards the life that you intend to live? And it's completely up to you. What you put in the center of this is yours, and it could change. You know, it's life is life. It's just the way that it is. And so, you know, so once you understand what's your North Star, what goes in the center of this, then, and by the way, we'll have some downloadable resources on our website. We'll put that in the show notes, a link to the show notes that you can kind of see what this looks like and everything. So once you understand what your North Star is, then I would say, then you start to go to your life in death list, as I call it, right? What is it that brings you life? What is it that just sucks the life out of you? And to understand those things that you don't want to do anymore that are non-negotiables. And that should start to get your brain thinking on how do I make these things that I love happen and what needs to happen to keep these things that, you know, suck the life out of me from happening.
Right. And it takes some time to figure those things out sometime, especially if you haven't thought of these things before. But when you can reflect on what energizes you, where do you feel like you are in a state of flow, where time just seems to go by so quickly, those are probably things to pay attention to. When is it that you feel really good, you feel peaceful, you feel like you have joy? Those are the things maybe that need to go into one of those buckets. And then conversely, what are the things that just suck the energy right out of you that you dread, that you just feel like, I don't want to do this? You know, every job I feel like has cheers and chores. But if you feel like you're doing more chores in your job than cheers or even in your life, then it's time to get curious about how can you create more of those cheers in your life so that way you have that alignment for a life well lived.
And listen, as a leader, you can't give away what you don't have. So if you're living in what we're calling the problem and you're not getting out of it, you know, you're stuck in that swamp, how could you ever help the folks you're leading get out of it either, right? You're not going to do that. It's just not going to be possible because you can't give away what you don't have. And so for you to, I agree, it does take some time. And so don't just take 15 minutes and write that stuff down. Take 15 minutes, write it down, and then revisit it and, you know, sit with that for a while. So once you've got that life and death list, you've laid it out, you've kind of sat with it for a little bit and identified the habits, the practices, the principles that allow you to go towards that life. Now what you want to do is define what I call buckets. You want to define about, in the original rule of life, there are four buckets. And it's interesting, when I'm looking at those buckets, there's two that are inward facing, and then there are two that are outward facing. The two that are in the original rule of life was prayer and rest, right? I love calling it spirituality. In mine, it's spirituality. So spirituality and rest, right? Those are the two inner ones. And then you've got relationships and work. Those are the original: prayer, rest, relationships, and work. And so the first two are inward, the other two are outward facing. And I think that's intentional and something to pay attention to, because, you know, if you put yours together and they're all outward facing, that's not going to help you probably obtain that depth of life that a lot of us crave. So find, you know, whatever your buckets are, you know, look at, you know, how do they fit on the inward facing and outward facing? And just a few examples just to read of what they could be. I already mentioned spiritual. You know, you could look at and say that is ethics or morals. It could also be a bucket of life purpose or identity. You could talk about personal development being a bucket, wealth or financial being a bucket, family or key relationships. You could also have health, emotional, physical health being a bucket, social, recreational. And, you know, in mine, I didn't like the word work. I didn't feel like that encompassed everything that I wanted. So I put livelihood. So it's mostly having to deal with vocation and ideas of work, whether it's for money or for for charity, and anything had to do with financial or money. So those things are what go in there. So I don't know, are there any other buckets you could think of that I might have missed, Adrian?
Those sound pretty all-encompassing, but the goal is for the buckets to be pretty broad, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And I think, again, I think if you even divide it further, if you have got the two sections of inward facing and outward facing, that could be a good guide too. And you don't have to have four. I really wouldn't go beyond five. I think as you see how this works, that's going to be too much to handle all at once.
Right. And your buckets might change again as you're in different life circumstances. If you are in a transition, if you are going through a major life change, you'll just have to really reflect on, for this time, for this season, what are those buckets? And again, hold it loosely. You're not, you know, writing this in concrete. This is a way, a blueprint to serve you, so that way you can be really clear on what alignment do you need, so that way you feel like you are living an engaged and purposeful life.
Absolutely. Now, once you have those buckets, then you kind of look back at that life and death list that we talked about and what came up in there, and start to populate your buckets with those values, with those practices and habits that, you know, will go in there. And in those buckets, again, limit it. You know, five is plenty to start out with. It's tempting to have a lot in there. Like a lot of us love to-do lists. These are not to-do lists. These are lists that bring you life. I was, you know, sharing with you, Adrian, before we started, one of mine has eight, and that's too many. I don't know how I'm going to keep track of those. And I know that I can combine some of those, or like they're similar enough that I could squish it together and get the same concept with that. But, you know, and then once you do that, sit with it for a while, live with it. Make some changes here and there, just like refine it, sharpen it. You know, you get the first draft to the first version, then you come up with 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, you know, and eventually you'll find something that really you don't have to fidget with much. And you start to incorporate that into your schedule, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly schedule. And it's something you review on a regular basis. This should not be put in a drawer somewhere and forgotten about. This is something you keep with you and you're looking at it regularly.
Yeah. And I would also say it's okay to start small, right? I think when you think about how do you build habits, it is small and consistent movement over a period of time. And so you don't have to drink the whole ocean here. You don't want to create something that feels so aspirational and so overwhelming that you give up, you know, hope within a week or two. This isn't a New Year's resolution. This truly is something to serve you so that way you can grow into the leader and the human that you want to be. And really just, again, going back to the idea of a blueprint or a map so that way you're living a fulfilled life. So yeah, just start small and just know that little bit by little bit is what you should be aiming for, not giant things that you're going to feel completely discouraged about in a week or two.
Yes, agreed. So I'll share a few things from mine. You know, again, my buckets are spirituality or spiritual. There's rest, relationships, and livelihood. And under the spiritual aspect, I have 5 to 6 mornings a week that I'm meeting with my God. And that includes certain practices like silence and solitude, contemplation, journaling. And then I have a specific practice called the daily office that I intend to do Monday through Friday, either at noon or when I'm done my workday, where I literally pause for 5 to 10 minutes. And that is really, really hard to do for me. Then I talk about having on a quarterly basis, a silent and solitude retreat as needed. So, and then I also have some reading associated with that. So that's kind of what's in my prayer bucket. In rest, I actually have exercise 4 to 5 times. I also have skating in there. I'm sure in one of these episodes I talked about how I like to skate. So that's twice a month, right? So that's restful to me. And if I don't exercise, I actually can't rest that well. I have 4 weeks of vacation, which includes 2 weekends away with my wife. I have a rest time that I refer to as Sabbath weekly, Friday evening to Saturday. Phone use. I'm limiting my phone use to 1 hour of social media total a day between YouTube and Instagram, and under 100 pickups average per day. So that's some things in the rest category. Under relationships, I simply just have to love on my wife every day. You know, we were talking about the other day about how like the average human needs 5 or 6 hugs a day. And it's like, for me, I'm not an outwardly physically affectionate person. So I need to be intentional with that. So my rule of life with my relationship with my wife is daily love on her. She needs that. That's appreciated. Also engaging with my kids, both daily and you know, intentionally with dates with each one of them. And, you know, we had talked about community, authentic community. So having a regular engagement with a small group of friends once a month, at least, if not a couple times a month, making sure that I'm engaging in that. And then livelihood is the last one. I have regular development for my professional, you know, skills and development. And I have, it should be for implementation and mastery, not what I refer to as edutainment, because it's so easy to go to classes and just go to class after class and my bookshelf gets smart, but I don't. So it's like, look, you know, I had a coach say to me one time, dude, you don't need to read any more books. You just need to implement the ones you have. And I'm like, That's very true.
Right. People with high learner, it's just, it's not going to happen.
I know. I have my way of dealing with that. And I also have intentional financial stewardship, sacrificial giving. I also have a process before saying yes to something in my professional life. Like a specific process where I don't just say yes. My first answer is, well, let me get back to you. Let me see if that matches with, where I'm going, and a discernment process, as well as a decision and planning model that I follow that's in there. So that's just a few things that I have in mind.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to develop that?
Oh, it really didn't take me very long, to be honest with you. But let me answer it this way. So for the last 3 years, I've been working on the practices. I've been working on identity for a very long time. Self-awareness is a good solid 5 years, right? And so when you combine all that stuff together, the ancient practice, solitude, silence, it's been about 3 years. So it's been that long, but then I've done a lot of work ahead of time. So when I sat down about 3 or 4 months ago to start utilizing this tool, it really only took me maybe an hour to sit down and put it to form over several sittings. So I might have sat for like 20, 30 minutes here, another 15 minutes there, another 15 minutes there. And it's still not finalized. I'm still working on it. But there was a lot of pre-work that went into it. So for those of you that are new to all of this, please, don't aim for perfection, just aim for progress. And as you work along and know yourself better and know things better as leaders, you'll adjust it. But, it's different than time blocking. It's different than using this tool called a Wheel of Life that is out there where you got eight areas of life and I've used that for years where quarterly I would rank each one of those areas on how fulfilled I feel in each one of those areas. And then what can I do to bump the number up? But again, that's doing, that's not being. This is a very different tool. And I'm like, man, if this worked for folks that were intentional around living a very intentional life, like 1600 years ago, and they still use it today, maybe I should consider using it. And so it's been
something must be working.
Right. And so for me, it's okay. It's giving form to these rhythms that I want to put in my life to make sure I don't forget about them. And it's just, what you measure gets improved. And I'm not saying I'm measuring it necessarily, but it's in front of me. Now I can be intentional about making sure that my actions and my practices match up with what I intend to.
So it sounds like your practices are written similar to SMART goals because you're being specific. You are measuring. It's kind of time bound. Like you have an idea of how frequently, within a week or within a month you want to accomplish these. So while not holding yourself to a measuring stick, it is helping you have a framework for what does success look like for you in those areas. And it's being specific.
Yes. And I also, I don't think I shared this, but I have read broadly. That's not measurable per se. I also have follow a nutritional plan that keeps me under a certain weight. I mean, that's measurable, but at the same time, like I kind of know what that is. So SMART, having some things that are measurable, and that might be the coach in me so that I know when I've crossed, when I've done that, when I know I've crossed the finish line with it, or I've done what I intend to do with it. However, I think some of these things, it doesn't need to always be, I have sacrificial giving under livelihood. I'm going to be honest. I struggle with that. And it's a little more aspirational than actual right now. And that's okay. I'm not defining that necessarily, but I know what it is when I do it. So, it doesn't all have to be measurable, and to have it be measurable is important.
Right. And there's a lot of flexibility in it. Yeah. And to have the things that you know that you're really clear and concrete on, it's okay to define those. And it's okay to leave the other components a little bit loose too. And to just know that you can pivot and you can be flexible within those practices.
All of the stuff we talked about this season culminates in this, and you can plant those things in this tool, in this way of practicing.
Right. This is a new concept for me. I've really been thinking about what this could mean for my life and developing my own rule of life. And those buckets or those categories that you laid out, I think I resonate with most of them for the most part. And because I'm such a goal-oriented person, I do like setting those measurable things for myself. I know that I'm moving the needle and moving forward, but also to not be locked into something that's so rigid. And I think that that's what's really nice about this whole idea, is that it's not supposed to be rigid, that there is elasticity within it. And it's really just another tool to help you live your best life and engaged life. What is it that you aspire to do? How do you want to be healthy? What does success look like for you ultimately? So that way you can be the leader and be the entrepreneur and be the human that you want to be. So great framework. I'll definitely be reflecting on that and thinking about my own practices.
All right. So challenge for this week is to sit down and start with, what is your North Star? What is that singular purpose that's going to guide your life? And if you already know what that is and that's easy, then move on to the life and death list, right? Set aside 15 to 20 minutes if you can do that, right? Set aside some time and sit with those ideas and start to map out this process and actually do it.
I think a good resource might be the Simon Sinek book, Start With Why. Because when I hear you say North Star, I also think about what's your why. So those terms could be synonymous. But for anybody where this is a really new concept, I'm sure there's YouTube videos about it or little clips. That would be also a really good place to start if you're new to reflecting on this.
Again, we're going to be doing a question and response episode coming up. So please send us your questions. What didn't we address? What did we do? What did we address maybe not to your satisfaction, right? What are your stories with all of these? Does this resonate with you? We want to hear from you. So if you have specific questions that you want us to go deeper on or elaborate more on, please put them in an email to us. We'd be happy to share those. And if you send us an audio clip of you, giving us your question, I'd love to air that during our question and response episode. So any final thoughts, Adrian?
Yeah, it's been fun, Chris.
Yes, it has. It certainly has. And I appreciate, again, we got one more left to do, but I appreciate everything, you joining me in this season and being my co-pilot on all this.
Well, thanks. It's been a fun experiment. Never thought that I would find myself in the world of podcasting, but never say never.
That's right. That's right. All right, y'all. Until our next episode, thanks for joining us.
Don't miss the finale of our compelling three-part interview with leader and pastor Phil Carnuccio on our next episode. We explore the profound impact that embracing a rule of life has had on his journey over the past 15 years. He shares invaluable insights and practical steps that he uses to guide individuals in crafting their own rule of life. And although it's a bit more concise than our usual episodes, it's brimming with eye-opening insight. See you next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Overflowing Life. If our message struck a chord with you, please subscribe and connect with us. Share your thoughts, questions, and stories with us on Instagram at The Overflowing Life or visit theoverflowinglife.com. And if you're looking for coaching that helps you create an overflowing life, please reach out to us. We'd love to partner with you.